time, we were showing huge losses in the income department for tax purposes. This is where my CPA applied his knowledge and expertise. This is what I pay him for. I'm not the tax expert, he is. On his own, without me asking, he then took our tax situation and tax returns for the last several years, applied his expertise, and somehow took today's losses and amended previous year's returns, plus did something else to carry some losses forward. I did not take detailed notes on the detailed steps of what he did. I just know he did more than I ever expected from him, resulting in more tax refunds from previous years. In fact, this was so amazing to the guys I worked with, my boss began taking a serious interest in this real estate thing. He, too, then bought rental properties and retired, and now my former boss, Sergeant Ron Cooper, worked for me at Vista Realtors. He passed away a couple of years ago. What's the catch with this depreciation? Here's the ugly part, but it too can have a happy ending. Let's go back to the $100,000 rental house you bought in the previous example. Suppose you operate it as a rental property for 10 years, and you decide to sell this rental house for $200,000. Take a look at what might happen. Selling your $100,000 rental house after 10 years. Sale price, $200,000. Minus your investment, $101,200. Capital gain, your profit, $98,800. True for real cash numbers. False for tax purposes. Add depreciation back in, $3,134.54 times 10 years equals plus $31,345.40. Real taxable capital gain, your profit, equals $130,145.40. You'll be subject to capital gains tax or income tax on your profit from selling this rental house. Don't run yet. There are still several alternatives. 1. Remember depreciation in the big picture. If you've got depreciation annually already going on, it may very well totally wipe out all of your capital gains or profit from selling this rental property. 2. Plan B. The IRS has another alternative for investors using IRS Section 1031 involving a tax-deferred exchange. The simple, basic version of the 1031 tax-deferred exchange involves selling this rental property in order to upgrade into another investment property. Using this procedure properly allows an investor to defer the capital gain until the new property is sold. 3. Plan C. As an investor and not as a dealer, you'll have the additional alternative to use the installment sale method of selling your rental property. This simply means seller financing or owner financing. You'll play the role of lender for your buyer. This sets the stage for investors to have the majority of the payment received monthly as interest income instead of capital gains income. So what really happens here is each year you own and operate this rental house, the IRS says the investment value of your asset drops by $3,134.54 each year. For tax purposes, what began as a $101,200 investment has decreased to $69,854.60. There are many courses, books, and experts on tax strategies. Many investors are encouraged to accelerate their depreciation and componentize their investment by chopping up parts of the property. For example, using the preceding example on a $100,000 rental house, one may elect to componentize their investment by breaking it down this way. Purchase price, $100,000, plus $1,200, closing costs, title insurance, fees to buy. Total of your investment, $101,200. Subtract the lot value of $15,000 from your total investment, leaving a balance of $86,200 in improvements to be depreciated. Cabinets. $7,000 depreciates on IRS schedule for cabinets. Carpet. $3,000 depreciates on IRS schedule for carpet. Roof. $5,000 depreciates on IRS schedule for roofs. Plus more stuff. The result, using the componentizing method, drastically increases your depreciation phantom expense annually. Using the very first example earlier, An investor would get $3,134.54 annually to write off for depreciation by simply depreciating $86,200 over 27.5 years. Using this componentizing method may result in you being able to write off perhaps as much as $10,000 for far fewer number of years. You're simply burning it up quicker. Warning. Something to think about for the big picture involving accelerating your depreciation using this componentizing strategy. Scenario 1. Suppose you have a high-income job or business. Perhaps as a successful attorney, doctor, or business owner, your taxable income is $500,000 or more annually. You don't have very much rental property. You're getting spanked in a huge way on paying income taxes. You'll benefit greatly now from componentizing. Scenario 2. Suppose you're investing already. You've got a healthy chunk of depreciation annually, so it pretty much erases all of your earned income and passive income. You cannot benefit any more now from componentizing. In fact, you're simply burning up your depreciation more quickly, and you might really jackpot yourself down the road in just a few years. Suppose you have $150,000 in depreciation annually, and you make $100,000 the same year. The IRS views you as having lost $50,000 for the tax year. In short, you've literally wasted $50,000 in depreciation. So why in the world would you want to use the componentizing method in order to write off, say, perhaps as much as $250,000 right now, causing you to show a loss of $150,000 instead of $50,000? Here's the method to this madness. I've made it a point to pay attention to the old, veteran, super-successful investors in my town and across America. The old farts all have the same huge super pain in the butt. It is a common denominator found in all of the old-timers. They complain about how much they pay in income taxes. Huge dollar amounts. Obscene dollar amounts. Why? 1. Their properties are usually paid off. 2. They're fresh out of depreciation. They have no depreciation left. So picture yourself a few years down the road. All or most of your properties are paid off and you have $0 worth of phantom depreciation expense because you componentized your investments and wrote them off quicker. Ouch! This taught me to keep piling on capitalized expenses because my goal was to never run out of depreciation. If I can always have more depreciation than taxable income, is a good thing. No income tax. Because I have so much depreciation today, my strategy is keep piling on capitalized expenses and improvements to drag out my depreciation for years to come. I really don't want to end up like the old-timers who are fresh out of depreciation and are crying with their huge income taxes. This idea is pretty much backward to what many investors are encouraged to do. Review your personal situation before taking action. Don't shoot yourself in the foot because somebody else says it's great for them. My opinion on this depreciation thing. Today, I think of depreciation in pretty simple terms. In the big picture, I discovered I am very concerned about depreciation at two specific times or activities involving my real estate investing. When selling a property, I want to know my cost basis of the property I'm considering selling. Cost basis is simply the dollar amount invested after writing off depreciation for X number of years operating it as a rental property. When preparing tax strategies for each year, I want to know how much depreciation I have for the year. My simple strategy is to learn from my CPA how much depreciation I have for the year. At this point, I know for the most part I can make this amount of money before paying income taxes. Let your CPA or accountant keep track and handle all of your depreciation and schedules associated with it. You're the investor. Become an expert at investing, not keeping track of depreciation. Earned income versus passive income. For investors involving taxes, these two words are very important. For the first few years, I didn't understand the difference, nor was I really ever encouraged to know the difference. Many CPAs, accountants, tax attorneys, and experts assume that you and I know these terms and understand how these incomes affect us for tax purposes. My own CPA, Mike Grinnan, seemed a bit surprised years ago when I asked him if there was a difference. I'm going to give my version of it from an investor's perspective. Earned income. This involves getting paid for something you do. Buy, fix up, and sell is something you do and may be flagged as earned income. Your job, my job as a cop, my wife's job as a nurse, real estate agents' commissions, and so forth, are all earned income. The major difference involves your typical payroll withholding taxes. As an investor, rental income, income from assets, stuff you own, is considered passive income and not earned income. This simply means you won't have to pay the huge 15.3% in additional income tax. Investor versus dealer for tax purposes. Many investors have heard these terms. The worst thing for any investor is to be tattooed dealer by the IRS. What's very frustrating to investors is Uncle Sam, the IRS, doesn't spell out in black and white what dealer and investor actually mean. You won't find an answer anywhere that 12 of these or 15 of those means you're an investor or a dealer. Here's my understanding of it after years of absorbing all of this information. Suppose you have 25 rental properties and you decide to buy, fix up, and sell a property to enhance or to help your rental property program. My understanding is this one activity would be okay for an investor. However, if you've got two rental properties and your activity for this year consisted of 25 wholesale deals and 10 buy, fix up, and sell deals, I would be very concerned about being flagged as a dealer and not an investor. Passive activity loss limitations. Check with your expert tax advisor or CPA on this one. The IRS is always changing rules and laws. IRS Form 8582 details the specifics on this subject along with all of the exceptions and coordination with other limits. Here is the website link for the instructions. irs.gov/pub/irs-pdf/i8582.pdf. Some more benefits for investors. Investors use IRS Tax Form Schedule E. Here's a snapshot of the income and expenses contained on Schedule E. All expenses deducted must be ordinary and necessary and not extravagant. Education would be ordinary and necessary, including seminars, boot camps, and conferences, and yes, even this audiobook is a business expense. Here's two links to IRS reports and information on this subject. irs.gov/taxtopics/tc414.html, rental income and expenses. irs.gov/pub/irs-pdf/p527.pdf, 22-page IRS Form 527 on rental property. My system of keeping everything organized allows me to keep my fingers on the pulse of my real estate business while operating on a daily basis. Plus, it allows me to simply push a button at tax time and email my books to my CPA. In May 2002, my CPA, Mike Grinnan, invited me to speak to a group of CPAs to show them how I keep all of my real estate stuff in a very simple system. I told him I preferred to show investors how to use my system, allowing investors to save money from their tax preparers at tax time while allowing them, too, to keep their finger on their investing business. Today, investors in all 50 states, Canada, England, and New Zealand, and even Singapore, are using my Investor Books Pro system with tenant tracking. It is America's only system for real estate using QuickBooks Pro. Get all of the powerful details online at investorbookspro.com. Tax-free profit and income for life is absolutely true when you properly use your self-directed Roth IRA. It is awesome. I'd love to expand on this, but there's not enough room in this book to do so. In summary, the big picture, the simple cut to the chase. So much, so fast for investors. All of these items mentioned in this chapter are the tip of the iceberg for investors. They are very important and can affect your investing and tax situation in a huge way. Common sense doesn't always apply. Good old-fashioned horse-trading math doesn't always apply. Here are some simple guidelines. Tax strategies also have to factor in a couple of other areas, namely asset protection and estate planning. When I got started, I really didn't have anything to lose, so I wasn't really concerned about asset protection and estate planning. As I grew our little empire, these two concerns became very important. Once again, if you're just getting started and have zero properties, don't worry about having all of your entities laid out properly. Just do it. After you get several properties under your belt, perhaps a dozen or so, you may do some research in establishing an entity to operate as your property management company and to handle all of your dealer activity. Keep in mind that this entity's profit will be flagged as earned income and not passive income. My objective and goal in this hidden tax benefits chapter is to expose you to some of my experiences involving income tax. You can help yourself best by taking these few topics and discussing them with your CPA, who is an expert in real estate investing. I use two self-directed Roth IRA custodian companies. Equity Trust, formerly Mid-Ohio Securities in Elyria, Ohio, TrustETC.com, and Carl Fisher's CamaPlan.com. Just imagine having your 20 nice rental houses all paid for in your self-directed Roth IRA account, dumping tax-free income and profit for life into your bank account. Resources needed. A real estate investing expert CPA who owns rental properties just like you. A real estate investing expert attorney who owns rental properties just like you. Investor Books Pro system with tenant tracking, the only complete system for real estate using QuickBooks Pro. Chapter 24. What's best? Houses, duplexes, trailers, apartments, commercial, or dirt? I'm asked this question frequently. The real answer depends on you. It should be determined by gathering as much information as possible on each option and pile all of this information on your scales to see which one gives you the most benefits and the least number of headaches. The number one answer for me and many investors getting started is a no-brainer. You'll get the good, bad, and the ugly on each. The ultimate decision is yours. Each will have a list of benefits, challenges, and problems. Single-family houses. This, by far, is the number one simple, solid investment. From beginners to the old pro, it's a hard one to beat. Let's begin with the benefits for you. Easiest to acquire. Single-family houses, as a rule of thumb, are the easiest investment to grow your wealth with the least amount of risk. Houses can be bought at wholesale prices. You'll be dealing with owner-occupants or just good, plain old consumers. Most house owners aren't investors. They're homeowners or retail consumers. As a sharp investor, this puts you at a tremendous advantage. You can buy wholesale and sell retail, and sometimes more than retail if you're really good. Years ago, I asked my good friend, successful, experienced investor and mentor from Sarasota, Florida, John Schaub, why he likes single-family houses. His answer was simple. Although not his exact words, here's my summary of his answer. With single-family houses, I get to deal with everyday people, homeowners. I feel pretty knowledgeable, competent, and the odds are probably more in my favor of creating a good deal for me. I can use my knowledge and experience to create a win-win situation for both the seller and myself. In the commercial arena, you're usually not dealing with everyday homeowners. You're dealing with high-dollar specialized attorneys who are probably sharper and more ruthless than you are. Buy wholesale, sell retail is a sound business plan. You can do this pretty easily with houses. I'm not promoting buy and sell as investing. My point is, with single-family houses, you really can buy at wholesale prices, and if the opportunity arises as part of your big investment strategy or battle plan, you can sell these houses at retail prices and sometimes a little more. Done properly, you can avoid commissions, defer capital gains taxes, and most expenses involved with selling houses the traditional way. You can buy wholesale, rent it for a while, and then sell it at full retail price with a tenant buyer. You may also choose to rent your house to a tenant with an option to buy. They can get their own financing somewhere down the road while renting from you and buy it. You may choose to help finance part or all of their purchase using the installment sale benefit for investors. With the sale of any investment property, a 1031 tax-deferred exchange done properly allows you to transfer your profit/gain into another investment property. You can use a 1031 exchange on any investment property. This means you can defer the payment of capital gains tax while letting your deferred capital gain earn appreciation on the new property acquired. Other benefits include each tenant lives in their own home. With single-family houses, most of the time, the tenant is responsible for all lawn care, trash removal, and utilities. Although not always required by your local landlord-tenant laws, many good tenants will actually do minor maintenance and repairs themselves and at their expense. Another benefit for the single-family house investor involves spreading your risk. With several houses in the same town, if one were to burn or get smashed by a tree from a storm, you wouldn't be shut down. With an apartment building and a tragedy strikes, you might lose all of your tenants until the property is livable again. For example, if you own an 18-unit building and a tenant can't cook, they burn up their bacon and a nasty grease fire on the stove. Wait until you see your local fire department in action. They ought to be in the crash demolition business. They'll chop holes in your roof, knock out windows and doors, even if they're unlocked, and will make the utility company disconnect service to your building. Now what? What about your other 17 tenants? Looks like they, too, might be homeless for a while. Flying below the radar is another benefit with houses. You can maintain a very low profile in your town. You can acquire a boatload of houses and wealth while maintaining a relatively low profile. Start acquiring a bunch of apartments and commercial property, and you'll be flying very loud and proud on your local Who's Who radar screen. Are you having a hard time trying to figure out which way to go with your real estate investing business? You're not alone. I struggled with this one for years as well. In this short chapter, you're going to get the pros and cons of each type of investment. Let me assume you have no desire to compete with Donald Trump's success. My experience is part of my opinion on each of these, and let's assume it's just fine to be a big fish in a small pond. To sum it up, Fred Flintstone style, three fingers, would you like to make $15,000 per month and do what you want, or make $50,000 or more every month and not have time to fart? Only you can answer this question. Let's take a look at each type of investment. Single-family houses. Pros. Tenant pays all utilities. Water, sewer, trash, electric, gas. Tenant maintains yard, lawns, fence rows. Tenant pays for their own cable TV, internet, and so on. Tenant is responsible for all pest and critter control, including bed bugs. Tenant keeps gutters cleaned. Tenant keeps tree limbs off roof. Tenant provides all appliances, range, fridge, washer, dryer, except for built-in appliances. Landlord decides monthly rent. Market conditions. Tenant pays annual cost of living rent increase. Mike does 2.9%. Assuming a decent neighborhood, great residents will stay 6 years or more. Reducing tenant turnovers increases your income and profit. You can always be the expert when buying single-family homes. You can always buy at wholesale and sell at retail-to-retail buyers. Not the case with apartments and commercial. You might get a great deal, but when you want to cash out, you can only sell to investors who want a killer deal, just like you. If you screw up and half-ass processing rental applications, resulting in an undesirable in your rental, you will obviously tick off your neighbors, but you can evict them and put a carefully screened great resident in place. You buy at wholesale prices and sell at retail. Single-family houses, cons. I'm still thinking. Duplexes and houses chopped into units. This one gets my goat. I've heard these called flats and doubles and triples. It doesn't matter. There are different names and terms for your region and town. It still boils down to a freestanding house with two or three units. These are misery magnets. With single-family houses, most towns allow most regular maintenance, such as lawn care and pest control, to be a tenant responsibility. With duplexes and triplexes, most communities make the landlord responsible for the common area maintenance. You'll have the responsibility of lawn care, trash removal, water, perhaps utilities, and more. Many bizarre situations involving utilities, heating, and trash may develop. Are your units separately metered for utilities? Will you have to prorate utilities between tenants, or will you include utilities in the rent and cringe when you see tenants washing cars or having windows open in the winter because it gets too hot inside? Some communities require separate meters for each unit if the landlord wants tenants to pay utilities. I've found some towns make it illegal for landlords to charge tenants for utilities without a meter on the unit. All of these things can be time-eating tasks or cash-eating monsters assigned to you. You should strive for an autopilot investment system. It's a whole lot easier. If you want to argue, but the cash flow, blah, 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 take a moment to measure your time-eating tasks of babysitting these high, hands-on management units versus the same number of houses. You'll quickly see you'll have more free time. For example, I was doing an all-day Saturday workshop in Tampa and was challenged about the wonderful cash flow on a huge two-story house in an older section of town. I allowed this person to ramble on about how they could chop this house up into 7 different efficiencies or studios and perhaps even restructure the rent period from monthly to twice a month or even weekly. I cringed at this thought. This lady honestly believed her challenge was awesome and great and good and profitable. Wrong. I'll bet you I can operate 75 single-family rental houses or more with about the same or less level of hands-on management. I know because I operated 75 rental properties and a full-time job before I hired a 5-hour-per-week part-time office person. The other eye-opening discovery for her involved my statement, "I'm not in the hotel business. How long do you want your tenants to stay in your rental property?" The whole class almost unanimously replied, "Forever." This is the correct attitude. Many of my rental properties still have had only one tenant. This is pretty darn good for the long term. Tenants living in a house call your house their home. Tenants living in an apartment usually call it their apartment. I want my tenants to call their unit home and get real attached to it and stay a long time. Apartments, efficiencies, and studios are designed for short-term or temporary housing. Multifamily apartments. Let's say these involve 18 or more units. There are basically 3 grades, A, B, C, just like school grades. A is high quality and nice. B is just a cut above average, but not much. C, although labeled average as far as school grades, a C-quality apartment community is not very desirable and is sort of viewed as bottom of the barrel by investors. Owners usually have trouble getting good insurance. Apartment owners like the following benefits only because they're wearing blinders, preventing them from openly entertaining new ideas. Having everything in one place is efficient. On-site help is easier to control and manage. No need for transportation for help. Many units in one location have less risk because the occupied units will cover the mortgage payment with several units vacant. They'll argue you can't do this with houses. The very same thing can be achieved. So let's say you have a 60-unit complex and another investor has 60 single-family houses. I'll bet with a good program, the investor with 60 single families is more profitable across the board, including time to manage them. Multifamily pros. One loan payment if you have borrowed money. One roof. One property tax bill. On a per-unit cost, you can usually buy them more cheaply than a single-family house. Example, a 2-bedroom house might cost you $60,000 in my town, but you can buy a building with 2-bedroom apartments for as low as $40,000 per unit. One insurance policy. Multifamily cons. Overhead cost on paid-for, free and clear apartment communities equals 50% of your gross rents. Multifamily apartments fit somewhere in between a hotel and a rental house. More tenant turnovers in apartments. You can buy at a great price, but if you want to sell your apartments, you will be dealing with another investor who wants to beat you up and get a great deal just like you did. This results in buy at wholesale and sell at wholesale, not retail. Example, building with 24 apartments. All are 2-bedroom and rent for $750. You have 5 vacant units because it's harder to find great residents. What can you do? Reduce rent to $699? You might fill your 5 vacant units, but your other 19 tenants want their rent lowered too. Headache? First month free. Same issues as the others. Remember, me and you live in our bubble and your tenants live in their bubble. Tenants do things we think are weird and not good. Pawn shops, errands, rent-a-center where they rent a toaster for $24 every 2 weeks. Tenants in your apartment, building, talk and share information like a little village. If you do any improvement to an apartment, the others will start clucking like hens to each other about getting the same for their apartment. You pay for dumpster service. You are responsible for pest control, roaches, critters, and so on. In my town, the landlord is responsible to treat multifamily units every month for pest control, such things as roaches, ants, mice, rats, and any and all kinds of critters, including bedbugs. Bedbugs ain't cheap. Just imagine what is going to happen in your apartment building when a rumor gets out that the people in apartment B31 have bedbugs. You may as well scream the sky is falling. Once this rumor is launched, every resident in this same building will demand, not request, their unit be treated for bedbugs. You pay for lawn service, trash, house meter, electric, water, maybe cable TV, and more. If on a central heat and air system, you will pay for their heating and air conditioning. You must pay for hot water for your building. You must be very careful when screening tenants. Should you screw up and end up with a terrible tenant in one of your apartments, you will cause all of your tenants to get super ticked off at you because of this one bad tenant. The unfortunate reality is your good tenants will move out faster than you can evict your bad tenant. If one of your tenants cooks bacon naked on a Sunday morning and sets the kitchen on fire, the fire department will respond to put out the fire. They will saw and chop holes in your roof, bust out windows and doors, and drown your entire building in water. Then a big boom happens. I've seen this happen over and over when I was a uniformed police officer. The police are dispatched on every call reporting a fire to secure the area, allowing the fire department to do their work uninterrupted. Usually, within an hour, the power company shows up and cuts the electric wires to your building. Now you have 24 tenants with no place to live. Unfortunately, our society has groomed tenants to believe it is your responsibility to put them up in a hotel. Where does this come from? This is why you must make every tenant buy renter's insurance. Most policies will pay for their hotel bill should a tragedy like this happen. Figure 24.1 in the bonus PDF shows an eye-opener. Experienced apartment community owners and investors will admit this staggering rule of thumb with apartments. So even the investor who pays a property manager 10% of their rent to manage their 50 single-family houses will still make more money. It's plain to see how 50 houses smokes apartments, even with using a property manager. Some more factors to consider. If you captured some apartments for a heck of a price, who can you sell them to later? How long will it take? It will probably take longer to sell than a single-family house. Who buys apartments? Investors buy apartments. Investors are looking for a deal to steal, don't you? From a simple fourplex to the several hundred-unit community, your buyer-slash-investor, just like you, is looking to steal something. With a house, you can buy it wholesale and sell it retail. If you ever needed to have a fire sale, you would have to take a huge hit on an apartment community versus single-family houses that you could sell off one or two at a time to meet your fire sale need. How will you handle stigmas? Suppose a violent criminal act occurs at your apartments. I've seen this happen to a buddy of mine with his large apartment communities. He pretty much went into panic mode. They hired extra off-duty police to patrol the parking and were terrified their existing tenants may choose to move, along with new prospective tenants avoiding their very dangerous, highly publicized, dangerous apartment complex you happen to own. You better have some cash reserves to weather these hurdles and storms like these. What about tragedies? A storm, a tree crashing into a building, or worse yet, some kind of environmental concern from asbestos, lead, mold, and so on. Imagine the panic cancer spreading through your units. Tenants may jump on the bandwagon to get out of your dangerous and unhealthy units. Lawsuits. The help us find somebody to sue attorneys will follow up if a tragedy strikes you. They already know where to find your tenants, in your apartments. They saw it on TV. If you had houses scattered around town, it may take a little more effort. Many apartment buildings have central heating and air systems. Simply put, this means not if it goes out, but when it goes out. It's out for everybody. Then what? So your boiler dies in the cold of winter. Are you going to put all your tenants up in a hotel? What will you pay for a temporary boiler while your cash evaporates paying the rental fee along with repairing or replacing the boiler? Houses have their own system easily serviced or replaced by any competent licensed HVAC technician. And finally, apartments for the most part fit the bill as short-term temporary housing, just a notch above a hotel or motel. Yes, we can find folks who live in an apartment for years, but most tenants are short-termers and move more frequently than those who take up residence in a house. Finally, apartments are very challenging to maintain their high-quality ranking. It takes some serious effort and money to keep everything in order. You absolutely must screen your rental applications very carefully. Many times, as a cop, I saw investors simply get lazy and greedy, trying to cut expenses and plug vacancies, and they'd put just about anybody into an empty unit. Wrong. This is one of the worst things you could do. Picture this. You've got good tenants in your building. You screw up one time, and without knowing it, you put a dirtbag tenant into your building. It will not take long for you to discover this. Your good, responsible tenants will let you know, making comments and demanding you fix this problem. Your good tenants will threaten to move if you don't take action now. Unfortunately, most states' landlord-tenant laws require the landlord to follow a specific process to evict a tenant. This isn't done overnight and may take anywhere from a month to 3 months to get the bad tenant out without any challenges from the tenant. What will your good tenants do before you get the bad tenant out? Yep, they'll move. Now you've started growing a cancer and your building will probably get labeled as the bad building. One last important issue with apartments. Suppose you operate in a market where you have too many units and not enough tenants. In my town, this is happening now, and it leaves us with the painful process of selecting cream of the crop. How do you combat this kind of market condition? I have no intention of lowering the quality of my tenants. However, I can lower my rent to drive good, responsible tenants to my properties for a wonderful below-market rent. Keep in mind, with my tenant tracking system, I get more than 110% of my rents, where most investor/landlords get only 85% of their rents. For example, if market rent on a single-family house is $900, I might advertise the rent on this home at $799, coming in at least $100 cheaper than all of my competition. I'll get more applications and will not have to resort to lowering our qualifying standards to fill the vacancy. But what about apartments? Can you take a building with, let's say, 24 two-bedroom units with a market rent of $700 and lower the rent to $599 for your next tenant to help fill your vacant units? No way. Regardless of what others tell you, tenants talk. If you do something like this, you'd better be prepared to lower everybody's rent to $599 across the board. With single-family houses and the tenants not knowing each other, if the market conditions get brutal, I can lower rents on an individual house as needed to fill vacancies while maintaining the standards of a high-quality tenancy. Trailers, mobile homes, modular homes, trailers with wheels, trailers without wheels. You got the idea. Without a doubt, I'll admit it, these can be cash cows. First of all, trailers should not be viewed as an investment. Investments are things you buy for long-term growth. Trailers are like cars and actually go down in value with time. Many trailer owner investors are very proud and protective of their trailers. These golden cash cows really crank in the cash flow department. The only problem involves the trailer itself. They should not be viewed as an investment. Perhaps you could look at them like vending machines. They probably cost about the same as well. You can purchase a vending machine and crank some pretty good cash flow if you place it in a good high-traffic location. Insurance can be a bear with trailers, especially those with fireplaces. Before my wife became an RN, she was involved in insurance. Going back to those days, trailer insurance was approximately 3 times the cost of a good homeowner's insurance policy on a house. If the trailer had a fireplace, they would really get spanked. You must find a location to park your trailers. A trailer park will charge rent. You could buy your own trailer park and charge lot rent yourself. Keep in mind that it's like owning a vending machine park or mall. You could buy dirt, pour a concrete pad, and park your trailer, or you could capture a modular home and set it on a foundation and tie it down. Most of the time, a very taboo label is associated with trailers and modular homes. The modular homeowner will vehemently deny their home is a trailer, However, when their guests leave, it still seems everybody calls it a trailer or mobile home. There are always exceptions to the rules. In my town, I'll stick to my guns on my opinion about mobile homes and trailers. I've made many trips into them as a cop. As I've traveled around the country, I've seen some pretty darn nice trailer parks. In Florida, for example, there are gated community retirement trailer parks. Super nice, with all kinds of amenities, including tennis courts, a clubhouse, swimming pools, and golf course membership privileges. But I'll still call them trailer parks. You could view trailers in the same arena or category as low-income neighborhood houses. I think of these houses as disposable houses. Perhaps trailers should be viewed in the same manner. Buy them for cash flow and not necessarily for appreciation or tax benefits. I've seen some super sharp and lucky investors buy beat-up and ugly trailer parks full of Jerry Springer's guests and get rid of its use as a trailer park, turning it into a very valuable commercial property. This takes some time, effort, and money, but many folks have done this too. Mobile home parks. This is not buying onesie, twosie individual mobile homes. Mobile homes are an interesting animal. In order to get a better understanding of the typical mobile home park, get on Netflix and binge-watch the series titled Trailer Park Boys. This series pretty much is a bullseye on the culture of typical mobile home parks, based on my experience from responding to all kinds of calls as a police officer. Let me point out there are some luxury mobile home parks, especially in Florida, where many retirees end up. Funny how not many people want to retire and move up north. These luxury parks are awesome. Do not include these in my definition of typical. Then you have the bottom-of-the-barrel, low-end mobile home parks. Many of these mobile homes have patched-up plywood floors, furniture, if any, with springs popping up through the sofa, and mattresses thrown on the floor in the bedrooms. Rickety, old, nasty, and super, super cheap. But they fulfill a need in our society. Do not include these low-end mobile home parks in my definition of typical. Mobile home parks pros. A fellow investor had 300 rental houses and 1031'd all of them into buying a few mobile home parks. Today his income and cash flow are through the roof with a lot less repairs. He loves it. Mobile homes are cheaper than stick-built houses. You can buy, sell, buy back, and resell over and over again. You control the lot rent, how much you charge for a mobile homeowner to park their home in your park. You get to rent the mobile homes you own. Mobile homeowners in your park are responsible for all of their repairs. Many times, mobile home parks have a little extra not-used-yet land to expand your park if you want. Buy it right, run it right, and you will have a very huge cash cow. Mobile home parks cons. You pay for the water service. You are responsible for ensuring there is some kind of sewer service. You could be hooked up to the city sewer system, which is best, or you could have your own standalone large sewage system. You maintain roadways and parking pads in your park. You make arrangements for trash pickup, cans, or dumpsters. You keep up the maintenance of the park, everything from picking up trash to lawn service, fences, swimming pool, clubhouse, and so on. You pay for park electric service for streetlights. You are responsible for maintaining mailboxes. In a typical low-end mobile home park, odds are you will experience a huge culture shock when you step into their world, or their bubble, as I like to call it. Most of the time, what you and I call common sense is the farthest thing from their mind, and you better get used to talking their language. Many choice words. Insurance is more expensive on wobbly boxes. If you own some of the mobile homes in your park, you may want to consider not purchasing insurance on some of these if you purchase them right. Do not pretend that each and every mobile home you rent out is an investment or has any real value. I view them no differently than low-income single-family houses and refer to them as disposable properties. Why? Because they don't really have any value. Their value is the cash cow and income it produces for you. Better quality single-family homes do not have the high rate of return, but they have far less management, headaches, and so on. Commercial property. Just like a casino, commercial property might be viewed as a game for the big players. Many can say they have phenomenal returns on their investment. However, I've seen many, including me, almost cry like a baby when their commercial property is sitting vacant without a tenant. They don't sit empty for a day or two. They don't sit empty for a month or two. I've seen some commercial properties sit empty for years. The big dilemma with commercial property is the value of your property. Your property's value is generally determined by the income it produces. Therefore, if you discount the rent on your commercial property, you've just shot yourself in the foot big time because you've just lowered the value of your commercial property. Suppose I had a fast food building paid for, with a national fast food chain leasing the property for $5,000 per month. This would mean approximately $60,000 in annual rent and no mortgage payment. Investors like to consider the cap rate of the property when handicapping the property for investment. If there was the opportunity for this property to crank $60,000 to the investor annually, along with annual increases in rent, and there is a long-term, perhaps a 20-year lease in place, the investor's desired cap rate would determine the value of this property to the investor when paying all cash, having no loan on the property. Let's take a look. The cap rate is the annual return their cash investment is making for them. 12% cap rate? The property would be worth $500,000. 8% cap rate? The property would be worth $750,000. 6% cap rate? The property would be worth $1 million. The great side and good stories with commercial property involve what's called triple net NNN, meaning absolutely no expenses for the owner other than debt service or their mortgage payment. The tenant pays for all of the property repairs and maintenance, all of the property taxes, and all of the property insurance, including naming the owner as an additional insured on the tenant's insurance policy. This is beautiful when it works. When this same property is vacant, things get ugly quick. You'll pay the commercial rate property taxes, insurance, debt service, utilities, ground maintenance, and advertising to capture a new tenant. When a commercial unit is vacant, it can sit and sit and sit and sit for a long, long time. They just don't move as fast as a house can. Imagine putting a commercial lease together. Not as simple as your standard rental agreement with a house or an apartment. A competent commercial tenant will want to lock in as much as they can to control their expenses. They'll try to beat up on you the best they can. Large national anchor tenants have leasing departments with full-time attorneys assigned to the specific task of negotiating lease agreements with owners. John Schaub tells a story of an investor friend who owned a nice retail strip center. A national chain drugstore negotiated a detailed lease for the property. Then his buddy had a huge bomb dropped on him. He had rented one of the units to a business that just so happened to sell the same competing item in their store as the chain drugstore. There's a lesson here. His buddy did not rent to another drugstore behind the national tenant drugstore. It could have been something as simple as a hobby store. The national drugstore chain attorneys, or their reps, watched closely as the new retail tenants began to set up shop in the strip center. They found one item sold by the new tenant that competed with products sold by them. This allowed the national anchor tenant to pull the trigger on a clause in their lease, stating if the owner rented space to another tenant carrying anything of competition to the national anchor tenant would not have to pay any rent during the tenancy of the competing tenant. Long story short, his buddy took a bath on this one, and the national drugstore did not have to pay rent during the tenancy of the small retailer in the strip center. Ouch! With commercial property, the stakes are much higher, but if done properly, the payday can be phenomenal. Dirt. Unimproved, plain old dirt. No buildings, no structures, just dirt. For starters, I don't know many investors who actually get a check in the mail each month because they own dirt. Years ago, my uncle, who owned hundreds of acres, would rent X number of acres to a farmer who would grow crops, and the owner would get a percentage of the monies received from the sale of the crops. He'd also lease ground to hunters on a yearly basis to hunt deer, squirrel, rabbits, and so on. One of the best investment strategies involving dirt is purchasing an option to buy to gain control of the real estate. For example, in a desirable area, a dirt owner strapped for cash who is struggling to pay property taxes might be a good opportunity for you to step in with your Roth IRA and purchase an option to buy, locking in your purchase price for X number of years in exchange for paying the property taxes every year. Your Roth IRA gets to capture all of the appreciation of the property without the risk of ownership, allowing you to shop at your leisure for a qualified buyer using the new appreciated value. I've seen some sharp investors use this same idea to gain control of several parcels of dirt located next to each other, and when all parcels are combined, their combined value has doubled or tripled in value over the individual smaller parcels. It's been used over and over in my town, especially in high growth and expansion areas for shopping centers and apartment complexes. Dirt is tough to have monthly cash flow now, but used properly, it can have a place in your long-term strategic investment battle plan. Self-storage. I'm not an expert on self-storage investments. Over the years, I have seen sharp investors with good management producing phenomenal income and profits. I have also seen some investors get taken to the cleaners and lose their butt. One of the things that prevented me from jumping into self-storage was my furnace and air conditioning guy. He bought a self-storage facility before the days of electronic kiosks, and his customers had a key to their rented storage area. One company, later determined to be a phantom company, paid for 20-plus storage units and used them to stack and store dozens and dozens of 55-gallon barrels of toxic chemicals. Super expensive mess and environmental hazard. The owner could not find any person or this company anywhere. They disappeared just like today we do windows people. He also discovered many others dumping tires, appliances with Freon, fridges, and other pain-in-the-butt items with expensive removal costs. Note: if you are going to do self-storage, do it the right way. You must buy it right and you must manage it properly. Marinas, RV parks, and more. I am clueless. You're on your own. Winner. Hands down, in my book, single-family houses win by far, although nice mobile home parks come in second. You can almost always be the expert when investing in single-family houses. You will have more knowledge and expertise than the typical homeowner/motivated seller in most situations. Resources needed. To help with doing your homework in your real estate business. Zillow.com website. Chock full of information, not always precise, but good, fast info. Redfin.com's website is a little more accurate and is my preference. Cell phone/tablet app, Financial Calculator, is today's version of the old HP 12C. It allows you to quickly cipher up any and all kinds of loan terms and results. Bookkeeping and operations software. Investor Books Pro system. You've been listening to Landlording on Autopilot by Mike Butler, narrated by Charles Constant. If you've enjoyed this audiobook, please visit gildanmedia.com, where you'll find a wide selection of our unabridged titles. Thank you for being a Gildan Audio listener.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.